I can't remember a time in my life where someone hasn't hated me. From a young child, I was labelled too loud, too wild, too much. Somehow, despite it all, it has never fazed me. Don't get me wrong, of course at times my ego has a pity party, but it's always been short-lived and the judgment of others has only fueled me to be even louder. I've survived childhood abuse, eating disorders, heartache, homelessness, substance abuse, and everything in between. Join me as I dive into it all and hopefully my rambles can encourage you to be your most outspoken self. Let's get controversial together. Hey guys, welcome to my first ever podcast. I'm super excited to get this out to you guys. This is a bit rushed and a bit jumping out there and totally out of my comfort zone, but that's why I want to do this, because it's something I've wanted to do for so long and I've kept making excuses and I could make a million more, but I'm refusing to do that. So we're diving in, and with the first episode, I'm going to dive into a big hard Q&A. I've got a beautiful friend that has agreed to jump on, hit me with some hard questions. That way you guys can dive in, understand who I am, and then we can continue on listening to me ramble. So Phoebe, are you there?
Yes, hello. Kudos to you for jumping in the deep end.
Oh, exciting.
So exciting. I think this is just the best way ever to introduce yourself to the world and be bluntly interviewed right at the jump. Everything's so manicured these days. No one, especially on social media, just wants to bust themselves wide open. So this is exciting. I'm excited for you.
I'm excited, but I know you, so I'm a little bit nervous when it comes to your questions.
I was going to say, you know, I'm not going to hold back. So are you sure? Do I have your consent?
Look, you got my consent. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off.
All right, let's go. Well, because there is, I think this is important. There's a lot of preconceived notions about you, about who you are, what you stand for. And I feel like this actually gives you the opportunity to address everything in one neat little package.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump right in then. The name of this podcast would suggest, you are no stranger to controversy. And I'll start with a comment I read last night on one of your TikTok posts. And they said, your page is full of drama you create yourself. How do you feel about that?
Oof, that's all straight in there, aren't we? Well, look, I suppose some people would think that I initiate and create this drama. But, I mean, you've known me my entire life and I don't know what it is, but there's often uncomfortable situations that do arise in my life that I genuinely have no control over. I think the only difference with me is I'm willing to speak about it all and put it out there in every context. Every single one of us has skeletons in our closet or drama that we deal with. We just don't usually speak about it. And I just don't give a fuck. So
yeah, exactly. And I'm really off this modern culture in society at the moment. It's victim shaming in every aspect of society, in every facet of society. It's almost unacceptable to air your dirty laundry ever.
Yeah.
It's like your capacity to keep things bottled up and pretend everything's peachy, that's the measure of how great you are. And I think that's so toxic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be good to see a world where we can all kind of both be great and share all our struggles at the same time. Like, they're not exclusive, like they don't cancel each other out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I love that you normalize normality, like struggle, hardship, pain, drama, all those ugly, uncomfortable words. They're actually a really big part of this human experience for all of us.
Exactly. And
that's what I love about your content.
So, like, it's, you know, we have this whole motherhood that paints so many on social media paint it to be perfect and whatever. And, you know, there's so many beautiful, incredible influencers that are trying to break that stigma and highlight that motherhood is actually messy. But there's not a lot of people that are highlighting life is really messy. We need to understand and appreciate that life is messy, not just motherhood, life in every capacity.
Life, yeah, exactly. And I think, well, it does, like, I'm not comfortable with it. I obviously don't have your level of comfort when it comes to addressing certain things, certain darker aspects of, you know, our shadow selves. And you've spoken a bit over the years about some pretty heavy things like childhood traumas, sexual abuse, self-harm, loss, depression, having an affair.
Yeah.
Is it difficult for you to be so vulnerable, or are you genuinely comfortable in sharing those things? Like, in those moments that you're sharing, is that actually comfortable for you?
By the time I share it, yes, it is. So, again, you know my life, you would know that this sort of affair went on for so long that it was something I wasn't comfortable to share. And I eventually reach a point where I'm like, why hide it? Why deny myself the opportunity to speak through these feelings, emotions, experiences? And I've really found that my healing has come when I do purge it out there, when I do speak about it, when I do write about it, when I do have conversations. When we're sitting and dwelling on these things on our own, we can never come up with solutions or even just ride through those emotions. So I just genuinely find comfort in putting everything out there on the table.
What kind of makes me feel like, oh gosh, did she really say that, is the trolls. Like, I personally would not believe in trolls. I would just think it was a word. Had I not witnessed in person the extent that people go to on the daily,
yep,
to harass you and create fake profiles and make videos about you and just rant, like, they get fully obsessed. They twist up every little thing you say. And that's no exaggeration. It's pretty full on. Yep. Why do you think you trigger these people so much?
That's a good question too. I think some of it does stem from jealousy, and not jealous that they're jealous of my life, because we know it's far from fucking perfect, but jealous that I can be open and authentic about everything. Mm. And like I said before, we all have skeletons in our closet, and so many people would not be okay if everybody knew every single detail about their life, their choices, what they were doing with their time.
Yeah.
And I think they get triggered by that. It's the truth is uncomfortable.
It's almost like a form of cognitive dissonance. Like, it brings up a discomfort that they don't even understand in themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's address some key issues then that I know have ruffled a lot of feathers and triggered people who have seemingly fixated on or tried to hold these things against you. I think clarity and context is very important.
Yeah.
The first thing that comes to mind for me is Munro's health.
Yeah.
That girl has truly suffered through some incredible battles in her short life. I know you very personally, so I'm aware how hard you fought for her to get to the place that she's at now with her health.
Yeah.
But it was a hard task for you to afford what she needed through those years of healing and fighting and whatever as a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
You were and still are accused of ripping people off.
Yeah.
I suppose you would say. A lot of people really don't like people who fundraise on their own behalf. Can you just talk us through those days a little bit, what it was like and what made you turn to donations or feel comfortable with turning to donations?
Yeah, well, it's still something that I truly don't have comfort in when we've had to do those situations, but that's where ego work comes into play, and you just have to swallow your ego. So when, you know, for example, it come to us needing Munro suits, I was desperate. I was desperate to give my child comfort. It was something that wasn't achievable for me to do at that time on my own. And I just had to swallow my ego. Her comfort come above any of the judgment or any of the stigma or anything of what I was feeling. And, you know, when it came to Munro's bathtub and, you know, we had this company donating this bath, I was like, okay, how can I make this happen? The only way I can make this happen is by installing it into our bathroom, which therefore comes with costs, which I don't have. So I just, again, I had to swallow my ego. It was to benefit her. And the rest of the noise of the outside world really didn't matter when I knew that I was going to be able to help my child.
Yeah, that was pretty full on what she was going through. For anyone who might just be new to that or hasn't heard about that before, or maybe they're just listening to you for the first time ever, what exactly is Munro's condition?
So Munro has solar urticaria and photoaggravated eczema. So in a nutshell, she's allergic to UV exposure, so the sun and fluorescent lighting.
It's just astounding to me. I have seen the welts appear, like, in recent times.
Yeah.
The welts appear on her in real time. Like, if she's even in the shade the other day outside, the UV levels were really high. And, you know, that's my own, what would you call it, naivety, I guess. So she was in the shade reading a book and she'd started rubbing, like, welts had started appearing on her. But I feel like that wouldn't be that obvious as a baby. She can vocalize that now.
Yeah.
How on earth did you figure out that your child or your young daughter was allergic to the sun? Like, was it a doctor, a test? Like, how do you pinpoint what was going on in that situation? How did she go? And how did she go from so severe to now being able to live a semi-normal life?
Well, it was incredibly difficult to pinpoint the trigger. You know, as you would know, the start of it, Munro was head to toe in eczema. And so, you know, working out a reason for that was extremely difficult. She was in and out of hospital constantly. You know, we would get her skin looking healthy and clear in hospital. By the time we'd, you know, leave hospital and get home, she was flaring up again. And I tried elimination diets. She was obviously breastfed. So I even, you know, had to stop foods myself. That wasn't improving. We'd tried every cream on the market. We'd, you know, we'd done everything. And I had an incredible pediatrician. And at the time, like, I was just on the internet because I couldn't sleep. I was scratching her all night long, every night, or rubbing her body, I should say, so she wouldn't scratch and cause herself to bleed. But I would spend a lot of the time on the internet trying to work out, okay, what are the causes? What aren't we seeing here? And I would notice this common effect that we would get her clear in hospital. And by the time we drove home, and at the time this was before we had the bypass, it would take us nearly an hour to get home. And she would flare up in on that trip. And I found, I started to speak to my pediatrician and I said, could it be something outdoors? Like, could there be an outdoor factor? And he goes, well, possibly yes, like there's many things that could cause it. So I started diving into that, just deep diving, and I stumbled across a little girl in the UK who also had photoaggravated eczema, and something just clicked. I just felt like maybe this is it. So I spoke with my pediatrician. He had said, you know, perhaps you're onto something. When we cleared her up at hospital, we covered the back. I didn't have tinted windows in this car, so we covered up the back windows with blankets, and she made the entire car trip home safe. She didn't flare up at all. So we shut every blind in the house, and her skin overnight was still fine. She was incredible. I took her out the next morning, and I've got photographs. The pediatrician advised me to take photographs, and we'll just watch what happens. And within 5 minutes, you could see her back start to, you know, blister up, welt up. She had marks on her skin. So we were then able to realize that this was coming from outside. And then, yeah, it would just trickle out there.
And as just for the sake of clarity around, you know, the things she needed, how much is one suit, like the full body suits that she used to have to wear to be able to go out in the sun?
So one suit and one mask was $2,500. So obviously you need to have two suits, because having a young child, you need to be able to wash one and wear one.
I didn't even realize, like, I actually was thinking in my head, 500? That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Like, and they grow like weeds at that age.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And to begin with, we didn't even start with those suits. She was being wet wrapped, she was being bandaged, and it was just a really brutal, long process. Any parent that's had an eczema child knows how excruciating wet wrapping can be and how traumatic it can be for the children. And wrapping her up head to toe, it was just really taking a toll on her. So I'd started it again researching, and we found these second skin suits. You know, they weren't going to make her overheat like some of her other clothing was overheating when we were trying to cover her skin. And they were able to keep, you know, her creams on well. So it just seemed to work. Yeah.
And so obviously Munro's father was not in the picture to help.
No. No, not at all. He was not in the picture from the start. He blew back in briefly when she was a young baby and then went out just as quick. And when she was, again, because we knew that there was an outside factor, we knew there was a UV factor, but there's actually quite a few sun allergies. So we didn't know which sun allergy it was at the time. So we were waiting to see a specialist in Sydney. And, you know, obviously there are wait times for that. And by the time we got an appointment, my pediatrician advised that we fly there, not drive. He was happy to sign the paperwork because obviously she wouldn't handle that drive. And I couldn't do that drive of a night time on my own, being so sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to fly. I didn't have the money available at the time. So I had reached out to her father and asked if he could help. And he turned around and said he couldn't give an F if she lived or died. He had no interest. Those were his words. He had no interest in helping us make that happen. So,
and I suppose that can bring us to, because one of your popular series on TikTok is about your child support payment that you received from Cameron.
Yeah.
Cameron is your firstborn Hendrix's father.
Yep.
And Munro and Morrison's fathers, they don't pay any child support whatsoever.
Well, theirs is always, so Morrison's father is always a random occurrence. So he's been the one that's probably contributed the most. It's just never consistent. So when he gets a job, it's always come out of his employment. So at the moment, we've just had letters to say there's a new assessment, yet I haven't seen any of that money. So we'll see. Maybe he has started a job. Maybe next month we'll get a payment. As for Munro's dad, no, he gets his assessments, but he owns his own business. So we haven't received payment in a long time. He also has avoided his tax return in a couple of years. So
is that solely your reason? Like, are you just a jaded mama who wants her Botox, wants her bloody fingernails done, and these bastards will not pay for it? Or is there more to it on an individual basis with the three of these men? Is there a real pain there? Like,
look, I feel the pain for my children. I feel the pain that, you know, one day Munro, for example, is going to realize that her dad paid for all of his other daughter's dancing and helped with her dance career, but he never wanted to contribute in that. My discomfort in it isn't that I'm just so salty I'm not getting more money. It's not about the figure that I get. I think the child support system is very broke, and I think that needs to be highlighted. And I'm sick of the accusations of that mothers or fathers are living the high life of child support. People should see, well, actually, it's a piss poor amount, and these men are getting away with doing diddly squat for the life that they've created.
Does it trigger you? Like, it's heartbreaking too, because these kids yearn for a father.
Yeah.
And how do you address that? Like, how do you even speak on that without getting angry at these shitbags?
For a while, I was very, very angry. And now I feel comfortable in the way that I have been able to help the children through things so far. I think, you know, I mean, time will tell whether they grow up and they have, you know, daddy issues and feel really broken from that. But I think I've raised pretty strong, comfortable children. And, you know, another thing that I often touch on, because people are like, you're not talking about the other children's child support. The conversations that I have with the children are appropriate for each level that they're at. So Hendrix is really comfortable. You would have heard, he makes jokes about a dad abandoning him all the time. He started doing that on his own. Yeah. So for years and years, Morrison at that moment is in that story and stage where I say, well, your dad loves you. He just doesn't know how to be a dad. Mm. And that is the line that I've used, and that's the story that I've gone with until they're old enough to ask more questions and understand themselves. So Hendrix, he's very mature and he handles it different and he likes to make jokes.
Munro is so funny. Like, you know what? I've met his father back in the day, and it's hard to not feel sad because he's actually a lot like him.
Yeah.
And I feel like they would really get along on another dimension. Oh, you know, in a parallel universe.
Yeah.
He's really, like, every father who is doing this to their fucking child is missing out. But it's just heartbreaking to watch. And, hats off to you that you have raised these confident, beautiful, well-rounded young children who aren't dwelling in that pain. Because I grew up without my dad around, and I know it is such a lonely, dark, confusing place to be in as a child, where you don't understand anything in general, let alone where the hell your dad is and why you weren't good enough, you know? So, how does Munro go with it? Like, she's pretty blasé to me.
Again, this is like, I won't make the jokes around. Sometimes she'll come out with jokes and I'll go along with their lead. But I don't talk about their child support a lot because, again, there's a lack of. But she is more emotional, and I leave it until they're ready to really talk about it and make a lot of jokes and be really open about it. I just leave it there. You know, sometimes I'll communicate about it, but I let her lead with what she wants to speak about.
Yeah. You can really tell, actually, in these children just by being in their company that there is actually no toxicity there. Like, there's no real self-esteem issues or extreme shyness or, you know, any kind of signs of brokenness. So you've done the right thing. I think you've managed it beautifully, which is hard because the ego just wants to bang on about these shitheads and say, you know, fucking wanker, I do everything for you. But no, you've managed it better than a lot of women could and have.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just pivot because there's actually a lot people don't like about you and I have a bit to get through, okay? No. So, everyone's really, favorite topic. Well, this is my least favorite topic. You know how I feel about this subject, but let's talk about it. The media has absolutely slammed the anti-vaxxer label right across your forehead, just slapped it right on there for the world to see. And you wear it quite proudly, I must say.
Yeah.
I think my favorite headline of all time was, anti-vaxxer mum says she'd rather inject heroin than get vaccinated.
Wholeheartedly stand behind that statement.
That was a proud moment for me. It's a very emotional topic. I've experienced a lot of heated conversations with people. You know, it's weird to me that people can just thrust themselves upon you and your personal medical business and want to have a fight about it. But clearly not getting vaccinated is something that triggers a lot of people in this day and age.
Yeah.
But how did you land in such a place? Like, and would you ever vaccinate yourself or your children again under any circumstances?
No. And see, I'm, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, anti-vaxxer, it's come out during COVID times. Well, no, I'm considered an OG anti-vaxxer, I suppose. Before COVID arrived on our doorsteps, I was against vaccines. And I'm glad that I made that connection, because otherwise, you know, 20 years ago, I potentially would have been lining up for it. So my children, the older two are fully vaccinated. I regret that deeply, but it's something I can't take back. I can learn from that experience and I can speak about my experiences to hopefully let other parents know. And this is not to sway anybody's view ever on vaccinating. Like you just do. I just feel that both sides of the story need to be heard.
Yeah, they both matter. And I think it's quite significant. Like people are really getting messed up by some of these vaccines.
Yeah,
where, you know,
like, and we can acknowledge that somebody can have an allergy to a peanut, but we sit here and go, well, no one would have an allergy to a vaccine. Yes, people will. So both sides need to be heard.
Yeah, and the risks are just, you know, we're talking next level. It could be nothing, could be something, could be temporary. But when you get so far down the path of knowing personally families and children who have died or children who are severely disabled or adults who were severely disabled as children, it's hard to swallow and it's hard not to get your back up and get angry and get really passionate about it. And I think when COVID came along, it was hard for a lot of us who had just been working on ourselves and shutting our mouths and accepting people as they were and, you know, kind of feeling like the outcast, but trying to just rise above it and not let it bring us down.
Yeah.
But when COVID came along, things got really nasty. And, you know, there was a lot of innocent families, my own included, yours included, who were segregated.
Yeah.
And that was really difficult. And I don't think, like, we didn't even really speak about it. Like, we would speak about it amongst ourselves and, you know, pump each other up and encourage each other. But it wasn't until after COVID kind of died off that I think you and I were having a conversation one day and we were like, how freaking traumatizing was that shit? Like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
Like, we were pretty... like, you couldn't go anywhere without a mask or anything. Like, people were just up in your grill, like, wanting to know every detail of your life. And, like, I was heavily pregnant not wearing a mask because I couldn't freaking breathe and I was about to pop a kid out, you know, and people were attacking me at work about it.
Yeah.
And trying to probe me and want my reasons. Like, it was really full on. And I'm talking like customers, not even, you know, coworkers. I'm talking just random strangers coming in off the street and then hurling abuse. It was so horrible. So we lived through it. But you made quite a controversial post during those times.
Oh, we're going there.
It was possibly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was probably the most controversial thing and it got you a lot of hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of knickers in a lot of knots.
To this day, Not ever, because I'm sure I'll do something else at some stage. But so far, that is the most controversial.
Well, you already know what I'm talking about, but it was a post drawing a comparison, or maybe you can clarify that with me, but a comparison between the segregation that stemmed from COVID restrictions, lockdowns and mandates, and the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Do you regret making that post?
No, I don't. I don't, because for several reasons. I don't regret it because I don't think any of us should live with regret about decisions that we make, because it just eats us alive. But two, people took that from a place of their ego and didn't really try to understand the context of it. Now, no, in no way was I trying to say that at that stage we were treated like victims of the Holocaust. That's not what I was saying at all. It was the symbolism. The yellow star was the symbolism because that was the first thing to unravel, to segregate people from society. You had to have papers. And here we are in a world now where we have to have papers. Yes, we're not being locked up in camps and tortured beyond control, but it was the start of this Nazi mindset, the start of this segregation, the start of this horrendous bullying for simply being different to that person.
Yeah.
And
I think, like, a lot of people don't like to acknowledge the world that we live in. Like, the fact is there are really horrible things going on in this world.
Yeah.
You know, there are countries who are being run by tyrants, and they are being tortured, and there are people being trafficked and kidnapped and everything like that. And we're not there yet, but, like, I guess that's comes down to someone's capacity to empathize and to really soak in the world around them and live in reality.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very much like, again, there is such a big community that didn't choose to get vaccinated and felt, you know, very discriminated against and very vulnerable at that time. A lot of people felt vulnerable. I know a lot of people that, you know, didn't want to vaccinate aren't as confident, you know, to be loud about it as I was, and truly were afraid to leave their home and felt, you know, so isolated, so alone, so different, so fearful. Like before any of it being labeled an anti-vaxxer, I've received death threats because of that. I get messages, people saying they hope that my rodent infested children, you know, die. They're sexual threats, like all of these threats. Yeah. And you can't tell me that that's not this Nazi mindset when you're being threatened and you should be locked up. And
it's so easy for some people to just jump the gun and get triggered and come from that place of ego where they're just like, oh, how could you say that? But they didn't take the time to think about it and process. And I guess that's the risk you take when you're working with social media. Like, you're going to get a lot of that. But it's all we are is normal people. I think that's the most frustrating thing. Like, we're not weirdos. We just, like, in my experience, I had two children have serious reactions, and one of them, it was just through our journey of trying to heal her seizures, that I researching and trying to educate ourselves and trying different detox methods and stuff, like, we actually organically really stumbled across that decision to, well, that would be stupid to go back there. And it was still like, we held off Artie's vaccines for 5 months or something, and we still gave into that pressure, and immediately he had a severe reaction, worse than Mia ever had, and she basically made it to the finish line with her childhood vaccines. And it put the fear of God into us. And when you're dealing with your child, like, it does not matter what anyone threatens you with, what they want to take away from you, if you're going to fit in. That's your baby. That's your child. Like, we were just like, fucking bring it. There is nothing we wouldn't do for those kids.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry. Like, this is the hill we're going to die on. But, you know, it's hard, I guess. So people would have resonated with your post if they were living in that reality, I think. But when you're not and you've never experienced it, I can see how it would just be perceived as so callous and horrible.
And I can understand that. Like, honestly, you know, before I came to, you know, seeing what vaccines can do and having my views on things now, you know, I probably would have seen that as a triggering post myself. I probably would have. But I like to think, because, you know, I've always been open-minded and I try to look at other things without reacting so aggressive in that manner, that I think I would have tried to be open to understanding, or even just going, oh, well, what is that about, and diving into it a little bit more. But
yeah,
it's, I forget where I was going with that.
Well, but what, like, if you could turn back time, if you could turn back the clock and you had one chance to get a point across with that, to reach people's hearts and have them see you and understand you and what you were actually getting at, like, what point were you trying to raise?
Well, whenever I post now, see, I've done those types of posts that I come and I speak about my children's stories and I speak about things authentically. No matter what I say, some people will meet it with hate, with anger. They will read it in a completely different context. So I've learned along the years, whatever I post, I'm posting for myself and to connect with my community, with the people that are at my level, with the people. And, yeah, and that's even, there are so many people that support me that still don't even agree with, you know, that post or other posts I do, but they're at the level of understanding, do you know what, that's her journey, that's what she posted. I don't agree with that, but I agree with the other things. And when I post, I'm not trying to make anybody comfortable. I'm trying to just make myself feel comfortable, post what I think, and meet the level of people that I want following and supporting me.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on, I think it's a little bit depressing. But I see where, I know obviously where you're coming from, and hopefully others can too. Like, let, you know, can we just get over it? It feels like, you know, there's been two groups in the schoolyard just banging on with bullshit, and I'm so over it. I personally do not give a shit. You can shove whatever you want in whatever part of your body you want, and I will not judge you.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a good person, I respect you. Yeah. I hope you respect me too. Let's be friends.
Yeah.
Can it not be that simple?
I know. That's, I just, I hope we're getting to that point in the world. Like, I don't, like, if you want it, if you want all these things, go for gold. If you want to slap a mask on your face, go for gold. If you want to fucking stay in lockdown, go for gold. But just don't push it. Like, let's just get along. You do you. Yeah. Let's just be happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so just coming into recent times.
Yep.
Last time I was speaking with Hendrix, and I told him that I was going to be doing an interview with you. And I said, you know, obviously your mum, she's copped a little bit of heat and she's been through a lot of stuff. Like, is there anything that stands out for you at all in all time? Like, I didn't know it was going to be recent, but it makes sense with his young brain, I guess. But I said, is there anything that stands out for you? Like, what impacted you the most or hurt you the most that you've watched your mum go through? And he said, the court case.
Yeah.
And I said, well, which court case? Because you've had two in particular. And he said, the subway thing.
Yeah.
And I said, how did you feel on that day, Hendrix? Like, what was going through your head? Like, how did it seem things were playing out in front of you? And he said, he goes, I was kind of scared, but in a weird way, like, he wasn't scared of the lady. He was scared for Munro and Morrison.
Yeah.
And it makes me emotional, like, because they, and then Munro joined in, and he just said that the lady was really, really aggressive.
Yeah.
And that you were being nice, and he just panicked. Like, he did not know what to do or what the hell you guys had done wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And he could see Munro and Morrison getting frightened because this lady was yelling.
Yeah.
And he thought that you did really great. Like, you stood up for your kids and you dealt with it with class. So then for the police to rock up, for you to be charged, the charges were dropped in case anyone isn't aware, because it was bullshit. But the way it went down afterwards, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You can just charge people with anything, like, just pluck a story out of your ass now.
It's pretty, it is pretty disappointing, especially, like, my, some of my hard supporters would know that during the period of homelessness, we copped a lot of hate. And a lot of those were threats and leaking our motels that we were staying at. And I went to the police and, you know, they tell me nothing we can do about it. So it's a bit of a kick in the guts when, you know, you can have a genuine concern for your safety and the police disregard it, but then, you know, somebody can just allege anything and we'll roll with that.
It's, yeah. It's, and so, like, what's interesting there is, obviously they had footage from the get-go. Subway's full of footage, of cameras, They could have just looked at that footage on day one and turned around to that lady and said, well, look, there's literally no evidence here that she coughed even near you or coughed at all. It's on camera.
Yep.
But they still pursued it. Why do you think that? Like, does someone in the police department have it in for you? Like, what is that about?
Well, I'll have to be really careful with what I say here because, as people would know, we are continuing on the court case now. We're going for costs and there are other things happening in the background. I do believe that somebody, whether it's somebody in that station or somewhere out there, I believe that they do have an issue with me, whether it is because I'm so opinionated, whether it is because of my views, whether it is because they cop phone calls all the time with people whinging about me. Who knows? But somebody there, you cannot convince me otherwise on that. Like you said, there is footage. There is footage where I'm hopefully going to be able to obtain a copy of that. And, you know, in a couple of months, I can release that footage. But the footage that they went and accessed is footage from behind me. So the camera's behind me. You can see my back, but that's all you can see. And in it, though, you can see that, like, we're pointing, arms are moving. That's all you see. Now, I went back to Subway. There's another camera. There's a camera to the left of that that would have been pointing directly at my face. So I find it very interesting that that CCTV footage was never accessed and used in the brief of evidence.
And so can you tell us now what actually happened? Like, how did the drama unfold? What were you in Subway for and who was – did you know this woman?
No, I didn't know this woman. So we were going to – we'd been running some errands and the kids wanted to eat. So I said, all right, we'll go and get some Subway. I think we were going to get some Red Rooster chips as well afterwards and sit down and – feed everyone. And I went to Subway first, and Morrison is Morrison. For those that don't know, he has ADHD and autism, and he's just a ball of energy all the time. So he obviously doesn't understand social distancing rules. And so this was during like the height of the fear of COVID.
And he's like five at the time.
So he is a little kid running around. And I had been standing there. The Subway worker had asked where my mask was. I explained I've got an exemption, which I do. I have a legal medical exemption. And she was okay with that. She continued to take my order. Morrison had been running around. They've got a drink machine out the front of Subway, and he always asks for a drink every time we go there, a soft drink. The drink machine had said out of order. He was asking for it. So I sort of took a step forward and I pointed with my left hand and I said, oh, mate, the drink machine's out of order. And I stepped back and there was a woman standing next to me who then started screaming, get away from me. You both need to social distance. Get him away from me. Respect social distancing. She starts screaming, carrying on. She goes,
An exaggeration or was she actually
screaming? No, she went from zero to 100 real quick. She started screaming. And then she's like, I don't care if you've got an exemption. You need to get away from me. Respect it. Respect social distancing. I was so shocked. Literally, I wish I could get that other camera footage because my face was just like a stunned mullet. because of how immediately she started getting angry, I felt afraid in that situation immediately. So I thought, I'm going to take out my phone and I'm going to record this because I don't know what she's going to do right now. This is intimidating. As I got my phone out, that made her go even more. I didn't think you could go even psycho, but she was. So she's like, don't get my photo. She starts screaming and carrying on. So in that brief moment, while my head's still trying to process what the fuck is happening, I thought, okay, I'll snap a photo, put my phone away, try and defuse this fucking psychopath. So I snap a photo and then I put my phone away and she's getting her phone out. So I'm taking videos of you then. I'm filming you. And I had my children. Morrison was with me at the stage, still a bit like confused what the fuck was happening with this psycho lady. So I'm trying to shield him behind me because in my head I'm thinking this is the height of COVID when videos are circulating, you know, Karen without a mask, whatever. And I wouldn't care if that happened to me, if there was a video of them doing that, but I didn't want my children in that. And I was like, do not fucking take any photos or videos of my children. And she's got her phone waving it in my face. You see this on the CCTV footage that she's getting close to me. Hendrix is freaking out. He comes over. I'd ask him to take Morrison to go and sit where Munro was and tell them it's okay. Just keep them calm while I deal with this situation and get them out of camera view at least. So I'm trying to carry on. The subway worker had said, if you're going to fight, you need to leave. I said, I'm just trying to get my order and we'll get out of here. Then this lady is still behind me. You see her on the footage again behind me, walking around, taking photos in every angle. And I get my order and I leave as I'm trying to leave. So again,
what a weirdo, I believe. Is that what they call a COVIDiot, or yeah, were they calling us COVIDiots?
That's it. No, we were the ones, I think. But so I, in that moment, I'm like, okay, this is not a safe spot. I'm not sitting in the food court to eat with my children. And I thought, because she's like, get security, call security, like to the subway worker. So all these thoughts are trying to rush through my head and process really quick. And I thought, okay, diffuse the situation, get out of here. I thought I'll go into Kmart because they can see where I'm walking to from then. So if security needs to talk to me, they know where I am, but I'm far enough away from her to hopefully calm the situation down and keep my children safe. Went into Kmart, we all calmed down, whatever. I said, we'll go and get food from somewhere else. As we walked out, security was there. And I stood there for a minute, but they weren't walking over. So I said, okay, kids, well, let's just go. We'll go and get lunch. We'll go home. It's okay. It's going to be all right. And I thought that was the end of it. And then you fast forward, that was August, fast forward to January, and I get the police turn up at my door asking about an assault. And I was like, wait, what? Like, literally on their copy of their body cam, like, my face is like, literally, like, I've been slapped in the face. I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, this occurred out the front of Subway. And again, you see my head processing. I'm like, are you talking about the fucking lady that abused us at the front of Subway? And he was. So I gave him my side of the story. Again, I thought that's where it would end because logically that's where it should end. And then in June, I received an email to say that I had been charged and I need to go to court for assault and intimidation.
So that was in January, and then you were advised that you were charged in June.
Yeah.
And it actually happened in August. The year prior,
yeah.
How bizarre.
Yeah.
Isn't it just disturbing? And I think this is what got everyone's back up with the whole segregation bullshit and the way everyone was treating everyone, that it's got to that point. Like, I don't think people comprehend. If you're fitting in the mainstream, you're fine and you're processing those vaccines and life's good, you got your job, whatever.
Yep.
You don't understand. Like, people just like you, they're just trying to go to Subway and get a banger. And they're getting harassed and bullied and abused, and it's costing thousands. They're being charged. They're being thrown in jail. Like, what utter bullshit.
Yeah.
Where do we draw the line? Like, what is going on?
I don't know. It's a crazy time.
There needs to be a new law. Like, we can use artificial intelligence to determine whether someone's just a straight up fuckwit.
Yeah.
So when they lodge a complaint, that computer program will determine whether it's worth following up or not.
Zap, zap. No, this person's a dumb cunt.
Yeah. Yes. Nah, denied. Yeah. And so, yeah, because the reason I wanted, obviously it's current, it's relevant, but I asked Hendrix, like, what was it that, you know, upset him about that the most? And his little face was just, like, sad. And he said, it was unfair. My mum did nothing wrong. You know, and she had to fight so hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we're showing our children too in this modern sicko culture.
Yeah, yeah.
That you can be a good person. Like, you know, these kids watch you work your ass off.
Yeah.
For them, day in, day out. And you have to fight. Like, people saying you're creating drama. You have to fight. Like, every day I feel like you have to put on your armor and grab your sword and be like, right, motherfuckers, let's go. Like,
yeah, that's what I feel.
We got to go to Woolies, so get ready for a fight. Like, yeah. What the hell?
Just, I know.
So it's not right. I really hope that – I feel, obviously, like that the tide was turning. The media was lovely. What the heck?
Oh, I know.
That court case.
That was a big turnaround.
We should give those journalists a shout out, I think, because integrity in journalism has helped. Well, a lot of us have been saying it's dead.
Yeah.
And they proved us wrong that day.
Yeah, they did. They were. I'm very, very thankful for that. I was expecting either silence, them not to do anything, or simply just a influencer charge throwdown. And that was it. But they were nice, and I genuinely really appreciate that from them.
What were their names? Can we know? God,
now you're putting me on the fucking spot. Well, I know Britt Ramsey.
Yeah.
With NBN. So, and then I believe it was Matt Gazy, and he's from the Daily Telegraph.
Yeah. good on you guys.
The props to them.
Yeah, big round of applause. I want to start
clapping. The cameraman who, while we're touching on that, they actually, no, I won't go into that just in case they don't want that known. So we'll leave that one there.
And so the banger, because we'll wrap it up soon. We'll stay in our little time cap here, but before you lead on to your next episode and your podcast takes off and all these new things are happening, I think that we should do a little bit of the affair. What do you reckon?
Ooh, righto.
What the fuck, you skank? No.
Takes one and no one.
So 4 years, that's a pretty solid run.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I won't lie. Look, that was 4 years in total. That was on and off, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably,
I've seen it. I've had a look at it.
Yep.
I don't like it. I don't know what you were seeing, but I'm not seeing it.
Look, love is blind, isn't it? Don't they say love is blind?
What did you love about this person?
Look, it's funny, you know, and I wrote my blog post, you know, Confessions of the Other Woman. And
but wait. Let's stop for a second.
Mm.
In case people aren't aware, you've recently come out of the closet.
Mm.
You've come out of the closet and you've opened up on the fact that you were romantically involved with someone who was in a relationship.
Yep. I was.
How does that happen?
Sometimes life just happens. When I met this person at my friend's wedding, and, you know, after Morrison's father and I had broken up, I sort of just went, I'm done. Like, I need to do a lot of soul searching. I need to do a lot of healing. And I got to a place where I was genuinely happy on my own. I was like, this is it. I'm content. I just want to be a mum. That's all I want to do. I just want to be their mother. I'm not worried about meeting somebody else. It's not my interest. And you know, even gone as far as I had spoken with my doctor, I've got some other health issues and the only way to really rectify is a hysterectomy. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, maybe if I want another child, we could look at IVF. So I'd said to my doctor, let's give it a year. If I don't meet anyone, I'll go and maybe go through IVF. I'd like a fourth child. And so, you know, I went to my friend's wedding this day, you know, happy, excited to see my friend get married, not concerned about anything else. And I went there early. My friend's a perfectionist and she'd asked me to go there early and make sure everything was exactly how she wanted it. And when I got there, I saw this man approach me and, like, it sounds so dumb. And honestly, if you had have said the same thing to me 4.5 years ago, I would have been like, you're a fucking dumb cunt. But literally it was like time stood still. Like, I can't explain it. Like, the energy that I felt, like, I was just immediately, I'm like, this is my person. I need to go and be near this person. And we started talking and the conversation just fucking flowed. Like, it was like nothing I've ever experienced. And driving back, like, after the ceremony, I didn't know that this person was also going to be doing the DJ work at the wedding. So, you know, I was speaking to my sister. I'm like, oh my God, that was so weird. Like, what the fuck, you know? And then I get there and he's there with his daughter. His daughter was helping him work. But I was so excited and we spent the whole night talking to each other. Like, the whole fucking night. Well, I did go off and obviously have fun with my friends.
Did it come up at any point in that night that he had a partner?
No, it didn't. He did not mention that he had a partner at all. He had said that he had separated quite a while ago, years ago, from his wife. And that was the extent of that conversation. There was no mention of a partner. So, again, by the end of this night, I was already in love. So then I got his number. We'd started talking. And the first phone call, he'd said to me, he's like, you know, I'm a big believer that things happen for a reason. And, you know, the universe, you know, gives us what we need. And then he'd gone on to say that he was in the middle of, you know, separating. He wasn't sure what was happening with it. And he just wanted to be upfront because he didn't want to, you know, lead someone on. And he was living on his own. He highlighted, I live on my own. Like, I've moved out, you know, we're just trying to get everything in order. So a person is obviously going to take that as, oh yeah, he's coming out of a relationship. He just doesn't want to dive into something right now.
Mm.
And, you know, the way his conversations would go on from there, there was no indication that he was actually wholeheartedly in a committed relationship with this woman. until conversation, until time went on, then it was very apparent he was still in this relationship. But again, it was still very much like, her children need me. The children are not going to cope if we separate right now. Like, I'm there because of the kids. I don't want to be there. I'm trying to work out how to, you know, make this work. So I just fed all, I was just ate up all these bullshit lies.
And so fast track to 2022.
Yep.
What month are we in? November. You find out that through those whole 4 years, he not only had his partner,
yep,
who he was apparently committed to, he wasn't, you know, separating from this woman ever.
Yep.
But he also had a lot, like he was a serial cheater.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a lot of women on the go.
Yeah.
And some, like one that you communicated with, was actually telling you of a, you know, quite a deep connection. Like he was sharing quite a deep emotional connection with this girl and even telling her he wanted to marry her.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you process that? Like, how does that make you feel?
It's pretty uncomfortable. And I know, like, a lot of people now, the accusations are, oh, she's just salty that he didn't choose her. But so when I say on and off, it's been me going, you know, this is fucked. You're not giving me what I want. You obviously don't care the way that you say you do. Like, fuck off. And he'd come, you know, he would go without talking to me and then he'd come back. And when someone's going, coming back in your life, like, I can't be without you. I'm going to make it work. I don't know what I want. Oh my God, I can't. Like, it gets confusing. And so eventually I just fucking snapped. I was like, I can't fucking deal with this. This is fucking craziness. And I just had this, it was only the other day that I had this moment where I'm like, I'm so done. I'm so done keeping your secret. I'm so done with, you know, having this fucking disgusting heavy cloud hover over me all the time. And I lived in confusion. When someone is saying they're so deeply in love with you and you're the first person that's made them think that they could get married again after their ex-wife and, you know, they just love everything about you and they're, you know, messaging you like, oh, my God, Sarah, you're such an enigma and I'm so in touch. Like, feeding you everything, you know, you've ever wanted to hear when you've never been loved, really. Like, it was fun. Yeah. So I've always been like, why? And I've said to him the whole time, if this is nothing, just tell me. Like, I'll fuck off. Just give me answers. I don't care. I just want answers. And it was always, no, it's complicated. Like, it's not that, blah, blah, blah.
So how much of this you speaking out? Like, what is the drive behind this? Like, do you want to hurt him? Do you want to hurt his partner?
It's not that I want to hurt them. When I did my post, like, I just was, I had this light bulb moment, like, the other day, finally, which I should have had a light bulb moment fucking years ago. But I was like, he actually doesn't care about you, Sarah. Like, is it through your head now? And it finally was through my head. So I was like, I'm done keeping this secret because it has eaten me alive. And obviously it's been eating me alive because I did a blog post, Confessions of the Other Woman. I did an open letter to her. Like, this is something I took away my morals, really consumed in believing that we had a genuine connection. Like, I truly believed that, you know? And so I had to purge all of this and I just felt like I have to get this off my chest. And I'm so glad that I did. Because with that first video that I did where I said, you know, imagine being in love with a marriage celebrant and they don't value love, a woman commented on that. That's how I found out about the other women. That is only how
that is how you got a grasp on reality.
Yeah. And it was finally I had the answers. Like, oh, we're not together. It's not because he doesn't fucking whatever. He actually didn't love me and it was all a game.
See,
and
I'm not a perfect highlight of why it's so important to walk in our truth.
Yeah.
Like, truth really shines a light on the path forward.
Yeah. If I had it again, I've literally sat in this constant, not that he's not with me, not that he didn't choose me, but going, what? The love that we had and the moments that we shared together, well, I thought that we had, and the moments that we shared together, it doesn't make sense with the other stuff. Now it makes sense. This wasn't love. This was, well, on his end, this wasn't love. It was a game. He manipulates women. He has a thing for single mothers and he preys on them. And that's, and now it makes sense and it hurts and it's uncomfortable. But now I finally feel like I've got fucking closure and I can move forward.
Do you feel like this is encouraging you? Do you feel any pull to explore these types of behaviors in people? Like, is this something you're going to be looking into with your podcast? Like, what can we expect
Oh, absolutely. I am going to. I mean, this podcast, I will cover everything. You know, some weeks might be just me talking about taking a shit, but some days we're going to fucking deep dive into, you know, relationships, affairs, abuse, all of these things. And I will speak more about the affair in a different podcast, and I will definitely be diving into, you know, why I want, like, trying to make sense of why are men like this? Why are they doing that? Why?
Well, why are men like this, and why are women susceptible to this? Like, there's so many layers to it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
And so, what about topics like, do you feel like you're done exploring things like self-harm, depression?
Well, we'll go into that, and especially, like, so much ties into it. And, you know, self-harm is something I'll always be passionate about and speak up about. And speaking of self-harm, this person that manipulated this relationship, and it's not, you know, not completely their fault that I've obviously got mental health issues over the years, you know, but years ago I hadn't self-harmed for years. And during that period of homelessness and this person confusing me and breaking me, like, I self-harmed. And I broke that. So absolutely, I'll still talk about that.
Yeah. And it is all interconnected. And I guess that's the journey that we're on in this life. Yeah. Like, it's a beautiful thing when we can look, that we can kind of pick up our pain and process it and gain wisdom from it and grow.
Yeah.
Like, growth is a beautiful thing. And you said something really profound the other day, and it was the last time I kept a man's secret was when I was sexually abused as a child.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, like, there it is right there. Because there's been this element of, what the fuck are you doing, mate?
Yeah.
Like, what is it about this guy? But you were trapped there for so long, and there's just obviously more to this than you've even realized. Like, how he was affecting your nervous system right down to your cells and triggering childhood wounds. So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but obviously we've got a lot to look forward to in listening to your bullshit. In the future.
Yeah, can't wait to
fighting
time.
So we're at our limit, I think. We've had a pretty good chat.
You sure you don't want to ask anything about me hemorrhoids?
We might leave that for another time. I know people are probably getting tired, but I'm sure they're really keen to tune in.
I think that one. That's probably going to be my most popular podcast, to be honest.
You know what we do? We need to talk about hemorrhoids more.
Great. Exactly. Let's
talk about all of it. Like, just.
Yeah. Yeah. I will.
I know.
Don't you bloody worry. I will.
All right. Well, that's it, love. I'm done with my questions for now.
I have to say I'm super glad because I'm actually busting to pee. And you probably don't want to hear that on my first podcast.
Yeah. Well, good. But, yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for being so honest. It was lovely to talk to you. And
well, thanks so much for the hammering. It's been a while.
No worries. I'm always here to hammer you all night long.
Appreciate it. So, well, thank you to everybody for listening. I'll be very surprised if anybody makes it through the whole hour, to be honest. I wonder how many will just skip through and just cheat. But I am very, very excited to be starting this chapter. I cannot wait to get the second podcast out. I hope you've enjoyed it. And to everybody that has supported me through all the highs, the lows, all the drama llama, I really, really appreciate you riding this shitstorm with me. So thank you all. Have a beautiful day, night, whatever it is when you're listening, and I'll talk to you all soon. Thank you all for listening to my podcast. Make sure you are following all of my socials. We've got Instagram with Sarah Mills_amongst the stars. TikTok is Sarah Mills_ATS1 for now. Who knows until we get that one banned. YouTube is probably Sarah Mills amongst the stars as well. I don't know. Find a link tree. They'll all be in there. Thanks, guys.